We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Story 1. I'm Justin. I live in Stockton, California, with my dad. It's just the two of us in a two-story house on a quiet street that always feels like it's holding its breath. This happened a year ago. One incident. One minute, everything made sense. The next, I don't know anymore. It was around 12:30 a.m., and I was headed downstairs to grab something sweet before going to bed. The hallway light was off, and the staircase creaked like it always does when you try to move quiet. The house was still. I thought my dad had passed out on the couch like usual after coming home from the late shift. But when I hit the bottom step, I saw him standing near the entertainment center, looking kind of irritated. "Hey," he said without looking up. "You seen the remote?" I blinked. "I thought you were asleep." He shook his head. "Nah, got up to watch something and it's gone. I've been looking for it for like half an hour. I even checked the kitchen and under the rug. It's not here." That wasn't strange in itself. The remote disappears all the time. But what caught me off guard was what he said next. "Can you go get the one from your room? The universal one? Just for tonight?" I nodded and went to head upstairs, but then I paused. I felt guilty watching him move the couch cushions like he was on the verge of losing it. So I said, "Hold on. Let me help look a bit more before I go grab mine." We turned the place inside out, sofa cushions off, pulled out the TV stand, shook out blankets, even checked the bathroom for no good reason. We tore that living room apart. Nothing. "Whatever," he muttered finally. "Just get yours." So I grabbed my remote from my nightstand, same place it always is, came back downstairs, handed it to him and said, "This'll do, right?" He nodded, "Thanks," and dropped onto the couch with that heavy sigh he always makes after work. I went back upstairs, got in bed, and set my phone alarm. I remember this part clearly. I put my remote back on the nightstand, right there. I was just about to plug in my phone when I heard my dad call me again. "Justin," he said from downstairs, voice normal, not urgent. I groaned, got out of bed, and walked to the top of the stairs. "What?" I shouted down. "You left your remote down here," he said. I froze. "No, I didn't," I said. "I brought it back up. I'm looking at it. Then what's this? He asked. I heard the couch creak and then a beat of silence. I came down. He was sitting there staring at something on the cushion next to him. It was my remote. The exact one. Same scratches on the battery cover. Same little white sticker on the back that says J. I stared at it like it might vanish. I thought you said you brought it upstairs, he said slowly. I did, I said. I put it on my nightstand. He laughed once, a short, confused sound, and handed it to me. I turned it over. It was mine. Not just a similar one, my remote. I walked back upstairs, and there it was, still sitting on my nightstand. I picked it up. Now I had two identical remotes in my hands. I stood there for what had to be a full minute, just holding them both, blinking like that would explain it. I went back down. He was still sitting there staring at the screen. I held them up. Okay. Look. He turned and looked at me, then looked at my hands. What the hell? He said. I don't know, I told him. I swear to God, I only have one of these. Always have. I grabbed it, brought it to you, came back upstairs, put it down, and now there's one up there and one down here. He stood up. You're messing with me, he said. I'm not, I snapped. Are you messing with me? He didn't answer. We both walked upstairs. I handed him one of them, and he followed me into my room. We looked at the one on the nightstand again. Still there. So now we had three. Three remotes, all identical, all physically there. He sat down on my bed. Okay. I don't get it. Are you pranking me? I asked again, this time sharper, like some kind of joke. He looked at me and he was pale. My dad doesn't get rattled easily, but he wasn't playing. I know what his jokes look like. This wasn't it. I held both remotes out and told him, look, try both. See which one works. He did. They both worked. Both controlled the TV downstairs. I brought the third one down. That one worked too. Three identical universal remotes, all fully functional, all physically real, all here. I tried to make sense of it. Like, maybe we had another backup one we forgot about. But I know we didn't. We only ever had one universal remote, and I kept it in my room. He'd always borrow it when the living room one disappeared. That's what started this whole thing. I stood there in the middle of the living room, holding one remote, my dad holding another, the third one sitting on the coffee table between us. You think maybe we just missed one earlier? I asked, voice tight. No, he said without looking up. We checked everything. He was right. We had flipped that room upside down. The couch cushions were still tossed on the floor. There was no remote there before. That third one appeared out of nowhere. And the worst part? The next morning, there were only two. The one on the coffee table was gone. Dad said he didn't touch it. I didn't touch it, but it vanished. I still have mine. He still has his. But I don't use it much anymore. Just seeing it makes me uneasy. Because for one brief moment, the rules of reality didn't add up. Something doubled. Something showed up where it shouldn't have, and then disappeared again. There's no reasonable explanation. We both saw it. We both held them. Three real, solid, working remotes, then two. Story two. You ever hear your dad say something so random and off the wall it sticks with you for life? When I was 9, mine told me, if you're gonna sleep outside, don't ever sleep with your mouth open. Spiders will crawl in. That was the one rule he had when I started dragging blankets out onto our trampoline in the backyard. Didn't care about mountain lions, didn't care about frostbite, just spiders. I live in a small town outside Durango, Colorado. Forests, mountains, the whole postcard scene. Our house backs up to about 200 yards of pine before the land starts to rise into rocky slopes. I was always an outdoor kid. I hated walls, hated the feeling of air conditioning. Summers, I'd sleep out back almost every night, flat on my back staring at the stars from the middle of our trampoline. My parents gave up trying to drag me back in after the first few weeks. That's why I remember the night so clearly. Not because anything strange led up to it. It was the opposite. Everything was normal. No bad dream. No creepy noise. I wasn't even cold. I just remember waking up with this awful pressure on my neck. Not the kind you get from rolling over onto your pillow weird. This was pulling me up, not down. My first instinct was that I'd wrap myself up in a blanket and twisted it around my throat. I jerked forward, choking a little, and my arms went up on instinct. That's when I felt rope. Actual rope. Rough, dry hemp, frayed at the ends. And then, this is the part that makes my stomach flip every time I think about it, I felt a knot, a noose. I shot upright. Air rushed in, but it burned going down. I started clawing at it, and when I finally got it off, I fell sideways off the trampoline and hit the grass hard. I remember spitting in the dirt and trying not to throw up. My eyes were watering. I could barely breathe. The rope was still hanging from my neck. It was short, less than a foot from the loop to the end. The kind of length you'd get if someone had cut it. Not frayed by age, not snapped. Clean cut. I stared at it, lying in the grass, dumb as a rock. It didn't make sense. I hadn't tied anything like that. We didn't have ropes like that around the house. This thing looked like it came out of a barn from 1802. I ran back inside, carrying it. I don't remember what time it was, probably just before sunrise. My dad was already up, making coffee. I stood in the doorway of the kitchen and dropped the rope on the tile. He stared at it, then looked at me. "Where the hell'd you get that?" "I woke up with it around my neck," he laughed, like I was kidding. Then he saw the burn. My neck was red. Not bruised, not gashed, but raw and irritated all the way around like I'd been yanked up by it. Like a leash. His face changed fast. He asked me again, quieter this time. "Where'd you get that?" "I don't know." I started crying. I didn't even feel scared at first. I felt confused and embarrassed and cold. Like I'd done something wrong and didn't know what. He touched the rope, turned it over, then handed it back like it was diseased. "We don't have this kind of rope," he said. "I haven't seen this kind of weave in 30 years. He had that look, like when a parent wants to fix something, but knows they can't. He didn't ask if I made it. He didn't even accuse me of lying. That said more than anything. I ended up lying on the couch for the rest of the day. He didn't make me go to school. I kept the rope with me, just staring at it, turning it over and over.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain, powered by BetterHelp, offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd tried couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Trying to see a trick in the knot, or some tag that would tell me it was from a store. Something manufactured, but it wasn't. This was hand-twisted. The noose was old-school, perfect, practiced, meant for one purpose. That night I asked him if anyone had ever died back in those woods behind our house. He didn't answer at first, then he said, "I don't know. I don't ask questions like that. I never slept on the trampoline again. We left it out there for years, but I wouldn't even step on it. Eventually the snow rusted out the springs and we cut it up for scrap. I kept the rope, though, for years. It sat in a shoebox under my bed. I think part of me hoped I'd figure it out. Like it was some kind of prank I didn't understand yet. But it never unraveled, never changed. It stayed dry and stiff and smelled like dirt and old wood. Like a barn beam or a coffin. I finally threw it into a fire pit during a camping trip with friends when I was 16. I didn't tell them what it was. I just watched it burn and felt sick until the last ember died. Even now, I don't have an explanation. No one could have gotten back there without making noise. Our dogs would have heard. There was no ladder, no sign anyone had been near the trampoline, no tracks. The gate was locked, and I checked every rope in our garage and shed. Nothing matched. The only thing I can think, if I let my brain go there, is that I woke up after it happened. Like maybe whatever or whoever put that noose around my neck had already done what they meant to do. But something stopped it, or someone, or maybe I did die. Maybe I was dead for a few seconds. Maybe that short rope meant someone had cut me down just in time. I don't know, and I'm not sure I want to. Story 3. I'm not the type to believe in signs, or spirits, or anything you can't see, touch, or prove. I was raised in Anaheim, California, in a tiny two-story house built in the 80s with paper-thin walls and carpet that never quite stopped smelling like dog. Nothing special about the house, just like there was nothing special about us. My brother Jason was the only one who ever seemed like he might get out and do something different. He was 18, healthy, sharp, bit of a screw-up sometimes, but nothing serious. Then one morning, he just didn't wake up. It was 2 days before his high school graduation. The coroner's van came and went. They didn't say much. The cops showed up because of his age. They kept asking about pills, substances, things like that. My mom was a wreck. My sister and I had been at a friend's house for the weekend, and we got the call in the middle of a movie. When we got back home, the place was swarming with police. They tore through his room for hours, looking for his phone, they said. They wanted to check texts, calls, see who he'd been talking to. Maybe someone had sold him something. Maybe he'd said something before it happened. But the phone was gone, completely. They flipped the mattress, emptied drawers, even pulled the vent cover off the wall like they thought he'd hidden it. Nothing. Eventually they gave up, said they'd check again later. That night was quiet. Too quiet. The kind of quiet that doesn't feel peaceful. It just makes your ears ring. I slept on the couch. My sister was upstairs in our shared room. My mom hadn't gone up there since. She wouldn't even go near the steps. She just sat at the kitchen table in the same clothes, nursing a mug of cold tea and staring out the sliding glass door like something might show up out there. 3 days passed. The grief wasn't fading. It was just turning heavy and strange, like the air itself had changed. Then that night, God, I still don't know what made her do it. It was around 3 a.m. I was half asleep on the couch with the TV on mute when I heard the stairs creak. I sat up, startled, and saw my mom going up slowly, barefoot, her hand trailing the wall, like she was half blind. She didn't look at me, just moved like she wasn't fully there. I followed her without saying anything. She reached the landing, paused outside our room and said, "Why's the light on?" I frowned. It shouldn't have been. She pushed the door open and just stood there. I stepped in beside her. There at the end of my sister's bed was one of Jason's pillows. Folded over it, like something someone had placed neatly, was his phone and his charger. The cord wrapped the way he always did it, tight and tucked in. It was just sitting there. "Is this some kind of sick joke?" my mom asked barely above a whisper. She reached for the phone like she didn't want to touch it, like she expected it to vanish. But she picked it up, held it, flipped it around. It was off. He never turned it off, I said. My voice cracked. Never. I turned and looked at my sister's face. She was dead asleep, mouth open, sprawled sideways like she always slept. She hadn't put it there. She couldn't have. We were at Jenna's house when the call came. The police were already in the house by the time we got back. No one had been allowed upstairs alone. I turned the pillow over. It was his, navy blue with tiny red checkers. It matched his sheets, not the bright pink comforter it was sitting on. My mom sat on the edge of the bed, phone in her lap, staring at nothing. Maybe the cops missed it, I said, even though I didn't believe it. Maybe it got kicked into the hall. She didn't respond. Her hand reached out and touched the pillow like she was checking to see if it was warm. And then the phone buzzed. It vibrated once. Screen still black. No light, no display. Just the buzz, like a dying breath. I swear to God. We both jumped. My mom stood up so fast, the pillow slid to the floor. The charger uncoiled and thudded next to it. I picked up the phone, pressed the power button. Nothing. I tried again. And again, it was off. Fully dead. But it had just buzzed. I know it did. And this is the part I can't explain. The one thing that has kept me up for the last 2 years. The light in the hallway. The one right outside the door. It flickered right as I stepped into the hall to get away from the silence. Just once. Pop. Like it blew out. And then Jason's door, his room directly across from ours, slowly, slowly creaked open. Just a few inches. We had left it shut. I'm going downstairs, my mom said suddenly, clutching her arms like she was freezing. Now! I didn't argue. We never found out how the phone got there. None of the cops had it. They asked about it when we returned it later. Said they'd checked everywhere. Asked if we'd had it all along. They were sure it hadn't been in the room. I asked my sister once, weeks later. She swore up and down she hadn't touched anything. But she said something that still gives me chills. She said, I remember having a dream that night. I was asleep, and Jason came in the room. But he didn't look at me. He walked to the end of the bed and was just holding his pillow. Then he tucked me in. She laughed like it was silly. He said, don't lose this, and put something under the pillow. She said it like it was comforting. I've never told her we found the phone exactly where she said he put it. Sometimes I wonder if whatever brought it back didn't want to scare us. Just wanted us to know something, that he wasn't gone all the way. Or maybe that we missed something important. But that phone had been gone. It was nowhere in that house, until it wasn't. And whatever moved it, whatever opened that door, I don't go upstairs at night anymore. Story 4. I live in Tacoma, Washington, and at the time this happened, I was renting a studio above a Vietnamese bakery on 38th. It smelled like sweet dough and old grease every morning, which I didn't mind. I was working a temp job at a mid-sized logistics company's regional office. You wouldn't know the name unless you've shipped refrigerated pharmaceuticals. My job was glorified data entry, mostly filing scanned contracts and updating spreadsheets no one checked unless something went wrong. 8 to 5. Badge in, badge out. I liked the rhythm. No one really talked to me except for one woman at corporate, Melanie. Melanie worked out of the East Coast hub. I'd never seen her, never even heard her voice. We just IM'd and emailed constantly. She had a biting sense of humor and knew the HRIS system better than anyone. We were constantly fixing garbage data together and joking around to stay sane. She started calling me her West Coast clone, and I called her the voice of compliance. One morning, Tuesday, late March, I badge in at 7:42 a.m. I remember because the wind nearly tore my ID off its clip. Right after I logged in, a company-wide alert hit everyone's inboxes. A major piece of federal labor law had just passed overnight, and we had 24 hours to submit compliance proof. Not prepare, submit. That meant immediate training modules, rewriting hiring policy, auditing the employee database for specific criteria, and documenting it all. My supervisor was out that morning for a medical appointment, and I knew she'd be blindsided when she got back. So I did what made sense. I reached out to Melanie. I IM'd her first. Guess who gets to panic on behalf of HR today? A few seconds later, she popped up. Already read the memo. Call me. We need to move now. I'd never heard her voice before. It was calm, a little gravelly. She talked fast but never stumbled. For the next 5 hours we were locked in, me in my tiny office, her on speaker, both of us drafting and coordinating like maniacs. We pulled in two IT guys and someone from legal on our end. I was typing, tracking tasks, building an audit report, writing a policy draft, and formatting the new employee training module all at once. We communicated through IM the whole time, like a side channel where we could toss snippets and jokes and short links. She'd write things like good phrasing or add to section 3 while I hammered out paragraphs. It was one of the most productive sessions I'd ever had in my life. At around 12:50 p.m., I heard the distinctive clack of my supervisor's heels in the hallway. She walked fast, and when she opened my door, she looked genuinely freaked out. "Did you see the memo about the legislative change?" she asked, eyes wide. I smiled and pointed to my screen. "Already taken care of. We drafted everything. Just need your final approval before we launch the module and send the documentation package. It's all in the email I sent around noon." She blinked. "What email?" I opened my Outlook. Nothing in sent. Confused, I looked in drafts. Nothing. I checked the IM chat with Melanie to grab the backup links. The entire conversation was gone. Not archived. Gone. Worse, my Outlook calendar showed I hadn't attended any meetings that day. My activity log was empty after 7:42 a.m. I hadn't opened the HRIS system, hadn't pulled any employee data, hadn't sent a single file. It looked like I just logged in and then done absolutely nothing. I started to sweat. No, that's not right. I've been working all morning. We had 5 people in here. I was on the phone with Melanie for hours. We even printed. I reached for the stack of papers I'd printed and organized during the call. They weren't there. Like they never existed. She looked at me like I was either lying or about to cry. Maybe both. "I couldn't even find you earlier," she said. "I came by like 6 times before lunch and your door was closed. Lights off." "What are you talking about? I've been in here all morning. You didn't knock." She didn't argue, just slowly backed out, saying, "Okay, just forward me whatever you've got." I scrambled. I rewrote what I could from memory, less coherent, more rushed, and I CC'd Melanie again, with an apology in the body. "Sorry about the weirdness earlier. Hope the dental appointment wasn't too bad." That's when I got her reply. A single sentence. "I was out all day, dude. Dennis ran late. No laptop. Didn't talk to anyone. But thanks for naming me on the draft. I owe you." I stared at the screen for a long time. My heart did that thing where it feels like it drops 3 floors and then starts running in the wrong direction. I looked at my phone log. No outgoing calls. Nothing to her number. No conference software logs either. And yet I could still remember the rasp in her voice, the way she laughed when I misspelled mandatory as mandatory, the exact wording of her suggested paragraph about termination procedures. I remembered typing, fast, furious, back and forth, laughing, solving, working. I remembered printing it all out. I remembered the paper cuts. But according to every system we had, I had been sitting alone in a dark office doing nothing for 5 hours. No IMs, no emails, no phone calls. Just logged in. I didn't sleep that night. I just lay in bed thinking, where the hell did those 5 hours go? Who did I talk to? Who typed with me? Who knew the new policy language before it even existed? And most disturbing of all, why did that version of the day feel more real than the one I was left with? I never told Melanie what really happened. What could I say? "Hey, I had a shared hallucination of us fixing everything while you were under anesthesia." I still see the folder I labeled Emergency Compliance Update in the shared drive. It's empty, created at 7:43 a.m. and untouched since. I didn't make it, but somehow I remember making it. Story 5. I live in Bakersfield, California, about 10 minutes from my best friend Gabe's house. This happened 2 years ago, and I still haven't made sense of it. I've told maybe 3 people. The ones who believe me don't talk about it anymore. It was a Friday night, early October. Gabe had just gotten the new FIFA and invited me to crash at his place. No school the next day, so we figured we'd stay up late. I got there around 6 p.m. We ate junk, laughed, and played for hours. Around 9:15, I started feeling off. Not sick exactly, but dizzy, foggy, like my ears were stuffed with cotton and the world was two steps behind me. "Dude, you good?" Gabe asked when I stood up to pee and almost lost my balance. "Yeah, just tired," I mumbled, rubbing my eyes. "Might head home and just sleep in my own bed." He looked surprised. "I thought you were crashing here." "Let's do tomorrow night instead," I said. He walked me to the door, gave me crap for being an old man, and I left. It was cold for October, quiet too. I remember thinking it felt more like midnight than 9:40. No traffic, no wind, just that eerie, heavy silence that makes you hyper-aware of your own breathing. The walk home is usually uneventful. Two turns and I'm on my street. I remember passing the same houses, the same dim porch lights. I checked my phone once. It was 9:46 p.m. And then I was walking up my driveway. I didn't register anything weird at first. I was still foggy, like I had a low-grade fever. But the porch light was on, which was weird because we never left it on unless someone was coming late. And the front door was wide open. I froze. "Mom," I called out, stepping inside. The living room lights were on. My mom rushed toward me from the hallway, face pale, eyes wide, and she just grabbed me, like full body grabbed me, and started sobbing into my shoulder. "Where were you?" she gasped. "We thought, oh my God, what are you talking about?" I asked, confused. "I told you I was at Gabe's." She pulled back and stared at me like I'd just spoken another language. "That was yesterday," she said. "No, it wasn't," I laughed nervously. "I just left, like 10 minutes ago." She blinked. "It's Sunday night." I stood there. My legs felt wrong. My heart was pounding, but slow, like underwater thuds. "No, it's Friday," I said. My mom turned to the kitchen clock. 10:01 p.m. I pulled my phone out of my pocket. "Sunday, 10:01 p.m. I couldn't move. My body was there, but something deeper in me broke. "You were missing," she whispered. "We called the police. Gabe's parents said you left Friday night and didn't come back. We thought..." She couldn't finish. I stumbled backward and collapsed on the couch. My backpack was still slung over one shoulder. My socks were damp, like I had just walked through the cold. My phone still had 73% battery, just like when I left Gabe's. "Check the security camera," I mumbled. "We have a motion camera facing the driveway." She pulled it up on her phone and scrolled. Her hands were shaking. "There," she said finally. "Friday, 9:38 p.m. You leaving?" She scrolled. Nothing. No clips. Nothing triggered the camera for the next 2 days. Then, Sunday, 9:58 p.m. Me walking up the driveway. "Where were you?" she asked again, not angry, terrified. "I don't know," I said, and I meant it. We went to the ER that night. They ran everything, tox screens, CT scan, blood work, psych eval, nothing. No signs of drugs, no trauma, no sleep deprivation, no seizures, no explanation. I saw two neurologists after that. One of them actually asked if I was pranking him. The other one asked if I had any history of dissociation or sleepwalking. Number nothing. I didn't sleep the first 2 nights after it happened. I just lay in bed staring at the ceiling, heart racing, listening for something. Anything. There was nothing. But here's what haunts me. I didn't pass out. I didn't black out. There was no gap. 1 second I was walking home from Gabe's on a Friday night, and the next I was home on Sunday night. It was seamless. It was like someone clipped out 24 hours of my life and pasted the ends back together. But my body must have been somewhere. Right? I keep thinking about my shoes. They weren't muddy or torn, just cold and a little damp like I'd walked on dewy grass. So where the hell was I walking for 2 days? I asked Gabe if he saw me leave. He said, yeah, I shut the gate behind me and walked down the street. But I never walked into my house. That was the part that chilled me the most, how quiet that camera feed was, like I had blinked out of existence. I still wonder what would have happened if I looked back at the street before I opened the door Sunday night. If I had turned around and seen something. Story 6. I wasn't even supposed to be home that night. My sister had flown in from Denver for Christmas, and since her kids needed the warmer guest room downstairs, I offered to take the couch. Our old bedrooms upstairs were too cold in winter, and we always just sealed them off once it dropped below freezing. That second floor hadn't seen anyone in weeks. It was around 1:30 a.m., and I couldn't sleep. Everyone was knocked out. My parents in their room down the hall, my sister and her kids across from them. I had the living room to myself, just me and my phone, flipping through a webcomic with the TV on mute for light. That's when I heard it. At first, I thought it was the heater kicking on, that dull, rattling groan that old pipes make. But then it changed. Sharp thuds, like someone sprinting across the floor above me. Then a second set of steps, faster, like they were being chased. Back and forth. Room to room. I froze. It wasn't subtle. It wasn't one creak or some settling wood. These were hard, fast footfalls, small, light feet. They had that distinct weight of children, the way kids run with everything they've got. I recognized the pattern. It was the exact sound me and my sister used to make when we chase each other around up there after school. Carpeted floor, but still loud through the ceiling. I sat up slowly and muted the TV. The steps didn't stop. They looped again, bedroom to hallway across the other room, back again. 10, maybe 15 seconds total, but it felt like forever. Nobody was supposed to be up there. I didn't move. I just sat there waiting for it to stop. When it finally did, the silence was unbearable. I stared at the ceiling like I could see through it. I whispered, "Hello?" But my voice cracked and it sounded ridiculous. Then my sister's door creaked open behind me. She stepped out, wrapped in a blanket. "Did you hear that?" Her face told me she'd heard it too. That dead pale look, no sleep in her eyes. She didn't even finish stepping out of the room, just hovered by the door like she was afraid the sound would start again. I said, "Upstairs." "It was upstairs, right?" She nodded. "It sounded like..." She stopped. "Like kids." We didn't say anything else. We just stood there listening. Waiting. My dad came out a few minutes later, groggy, annoyed. "What are you two doing up?" I didn't want to sound crazy. I just said, "We heard something upstairs." He blinked like it hadn't processed. "No one's up there." "I know." He stood there staring toward the stairs. "You want me to check it out?" But he didn't move. Neither of us answered. That second floor was empty. Completely empty. And sealed off. My mom even packed the vents so we didn't waste heat on it. The doors were shut. The windows locked. We were the only ones in the house. I never went up there to check. I couldn't. Something about that sound, the way it echoed, the familiarity of it. It wasn't just footsteps. It felt like a recording almost, like someone hit rewind on our childhood and played a loop. The exact way we used to run. The same rooms. The same rhythm. It was us. It was me and my sister. Only we were both right there on the ground floor, wide awake and scared out of our minds. I didn't sleep that night. My sister didn't either. We just sat in the kitchen drinking tea until the sun came up. No one brought it up again. My dad laughed it off the next day. Said the cold probably shifted the boards or something. But my sister avoids the topic completely. She won't even let her kids go near the stairs now. Told them it's too cold, too dangerous, which it isn't. I don't believe in ghosts. I still don't, even after that. Nothing ever felt evil, just wrong. Like time bent in the smallest, scariest way. That night didn't feel haunted. It felt broken. Story 7. I wasn't sick. I didn't feel tired. Nothing about that day hinted that something was wrong. It was a Wednesday, March 17th, 2021. I remember that because it was the last normal day I've ever trusted. I lived at home in Mission Viejo, California. I was 19, taking community college classes and staying out of the way. Around 5:30 p.m., I was in my bedroom, sitting cross-legged on my carpet, trying to finish a stats assignment on my laptop. There was nothing unusual, just a stale bag of tortilla chips, Spotify low in the background, sun leaking through the blinds. And then everything started bending. At first, I thought I was just zoning out. You know when you stare at a screen too long and your eyes play tricks on you? That, but worse. I looked up from the screen and realized the corners of my room looked smudged, like someone was rubbing the edges of my vision with their thumb. I blinked, rubbed my eyes, and tried to focus. Still there. I turned my head, slowly. The left and right edges of everything were disappearing. No, not disappearing. Melting, blurring together like wet paint. My peripheral vision was being erased, like someone had taken an eraser to the edges of my reality. Mom, I called out, even though I knew she wasn't home. I stood up. My legs felt light. I walked into the hallway, then into the kitchen. Every step I took made things worse. The walls warped slightly like they were breathing, expanding, contracting. The kitchen table wasn't solid anymore. It rippled like a reflection on water. I looked down at my hands. They looked distant, like I was seeing them through a warped glass bottle. I whispered, "What the hell is happening to me?" I pressed my palms to my eyes and breathed hard. I thought, maybe it's a panic attack. Maybe I was dehydrated. I grabbed a glass from the cabinet and it felt wrong in my hand. The shape was off. I couldn't explain how. I just knew the glass felt like it wasn't real, like it was being simulated poorly. That's when I saw something in the corner of the room. Not someone, something. A dark patch in the shape of a person, but no features, no face, no movement. It stood just beyond the smudged edges of my vision. Not quite inside the real world. Not quite outside of it either. I turned to look directly at it. Gone. I spun around. "No, no, no," I whispered. "That didn't just happen." I stumbled into the bathroom, splashed cold water on my face, and looked at myself in the mirror. Except it wasn't me. My face was there, sure, but the proportions were off. My right eye was slightly too high. My mouth didn't match the way I felt it moving. The reflection was delayed by half a second, just enough to register that something was deeply, deeply broken. I backed away, heart pounding. I wanted to call someone, but I didn't trust my hands to use the phone. I didn't trust the phone to be real. I walked back to my room, stepping carefully around furniture. I suddenly wasn't sure it was even solid, and my vision was collapsing in. I don't know how to explain this. It was like a tunnel was closing in from all directions. My entire field of view narrowed to a small, circular hole, like looking through the end of a funnel. Everything outside that tiny center was gray static, not blackness, static, like a broken television feed. I couldn't see the floor under my feet anymore. I couldn't see the walls. Just that one clear hole of vision in the center. Everything else, corrupted. I dropped to my knees and closed my eyes. I was shaking. Something felt fundamentally wrong, not just with my body, but with the world. Like reality itself had suffered a glitch, a real one. Not a figure of speech. Not I felt weird. I mean the actual fabric of my world had a tear in it, and I was falling through. I curled up, my head pounding, and I whispered, "Please stop. Please stop. Please stop." Then silence, total terrifying silence. No sounds from the street, no hum from the fridge, no birds, no cars, nothing. Just a blank, dead silence that made my skin crawl. I opened my eyes again. Everything had stopped, literally frozen. My room, what I could still see, looked paused. A strand of my hair was suspended in midair, like a screenshot. The light outside had halted mid-flicker. The dust in the air hung like glitter, unmoving. And in that moment, I realized I wasn't breathing. I wasn't even sure I had lungs anymore. I couldn't feel my chest rise, couldn't feel my heart. I said out loud, though I don't know if I really spoke it, "Am I dead?" That's when the headache hit. It didn't build up, it detonated, like a spike through the base of my skull. A white-hot pressure that felt like my brain was trying to push out through my eyes. I screamed, or thought I screamed. The sound didn't happen. I collapsed onto my side. Everything was flashing, like being inside a strobe light behind my eyes. Then, one more blink, and the tunnel vision started to clear. It pulled back slowly. My peripheral returned in chunks, like loading a glitchy video game. The static faded. Colors returned, wrong at first, too bright, then too dull, until they evened out. I could breathe again. I could hear the clock ticking in the kitchen. A car drove past. The hum of life returned, slowly, cruelly. I opened my eyes wide. Everything was back, and I lay there in the middle of my room, with blood crusted under one nostril, shaking like I'd survived an exorcism. I didn't move for another hour. I was terrified that moving would break the world again. Later that night, I got the worst headache I've ever had in my life. Like my skull had been hollowed out with a spoon, I threw up twice. The ER doctor said it was a severe migraine with aura, gave me anti-nausea pills and sent me home. But I've had migraines since, and none of them, not a single one, felt like that. None of them made the world pixelate. None of them froze time. None of them felt like the simulation glitched and tried to kick me out. I still don't know what happened, but I don't think it was medical. I think, just for a second, something broke, and I was awake for it. Story 8. I'm Jake. I live about an hour outside Helsinki in Finland, in this dead silent area where the forest starts right past the backyard. No neighbors close enough to hear if something happens. It's quiet out here in a way that messes with your head sometimes. You can hear your own thoughts echo, or things you think are your thoughts. It was January. Cold, dry, dark. Nights stretch forever that time of year. I'd been up late texting my ex, Ella. We were still talking most nights, just as friends, even though things had ended months ago. Nothing heavy, just random memes, occasional dumb arguments about movies. That night we were going back and forth about some horror film she liked that I said was garbage. Pretty normal. It was around 2:30 a.m. when I heard it. Now, I don't know how to describe this in a way that doesn't sound ridiculous, but it sounded like an ice cream truck. That weird, high-pitched music box jingle. You know that tinny melody they all play, kind of playful but always just slightly off-key? Like it's trying to sound cheerful but never quite gets there? Except, we don't have ice cream trucks in Finland. Not out here. Especially not in the middle of the goddamn woods in January. There was snow on the ground. Who the hell would even be driving one? At first I thought maybe it was some weird ringtone on my phone. I paused and looked at it. No calls, no alerts. I asked Ella if she heard anything on her end, like if maybe she accidentally sent a video or audio or something. She texted back, "No? What are you talking about?" I didn't even answer that. I just froze and listened. The sound was faint at first, like it was far off, but it was definitely outside. Not from a screen, not from any electronic. It was in the air. I moved toward the window that faces the back of the house. It's just dense woods out there. Trees packed tight together. No paths, no roads, just forest. But the sound was louder now. The melody repeating, slowing down a little, like it was dragging. Almost, struggling to play. And it was getting closer. I didn't even realize I'd stopped breathing until I felt my chest ache. I texted Ella again, just one word. "Dude," she replied immediately. "What?" "There's something outside." "Like what?" I didn't know how to answer that. I was still staring out the window, waiting to see something move. But the sound, it wasn't moving left or right. It was moving forward, through the trees, straight toward my house. That's when the music just cut off, sharp, instant. No fade out, just gone. Dead silence. I stepped away from the window and stood there, not knowing what to do. I didn't want to open the door. I didn't want to even look again. I felt like whatever it was had stopped just at the edge of the trees, waiting. Ella called me. I answered, whispering, "Don't talk, just listen." She went quiet immediately. I moved to the front door and listened. Still nothing, just the sound of my breath and a faint hum in my ears. Then there was this soft, metallic chime. Not the music again, just a single ding, like a tiny bell. It came from the side of the house this time, like someone walking past my wall, holding a bell, and letting it ring once. Ella susurro, "Jake, ¿qué es eso?" I couldn't answer. I was gripping the phone so hard it hurt. I moved slowly to the kitchen window, which faces the side yard. There's a light there, one of those motion sensor ones. It was on, but nothing was there. No wind, no animals, no person. Just snow on the ground, totally untouched. Then something knocked. Once, from the back of the house, I swear to God I jumped and nearly dropped the phone. Ella heard it too. "What the hell was that?" she said. I didn't answer. I couldn't. The knock was slow, deliberate, like someone who knew I was listening. And then, this is the part I still can't explain, my phone glitched, not froze, glitched. Ella's voice warped mid-sentence. It stretched out, like a tape being pulled too slow. "Jack, can you hear?" Then silence. Phone still on, still connected. Timer still counting, but no sound. Then my lights flickered, all of them, once, fast. I bolted. I didn't grab anything. Didn't put on shoes. Just ran to the front door, yanked it open, and sprinted outside into the snow. I didn't even feel the cold. I made it to the edge of the driveway before I turned around. Just once. Nothing behind me. Nothing in the windows. House was still. I stood there for what felt like forever, shaking. The phone call dropped. I called Ella back, went straight to voicemail. Tried again. Same thing. I didn't go back inside for hours. I stayed in my car with the engine running and every door locked. Ella finally texted around 4 a.m. She said her phone had shut off by itself and wouldn't turn back on for nearly 30 minutes. When it did, she had 3 missed calls from me, even though I only tried twice. One of the calls was over an hour long. She swears she never picked up. I checked my call log. It was there. 1 hour, 12 minutes. And the time matched when everything went silent. I've got no explanation. I've lived here my whole life. Never heard anything like that before or since. Nothing in the local news. No weird reports. Nothing on the neighborhood Facebook group. Just me and that damn music. Story 9. I never liked that house, not from the day we moved in. It was this towering, century-old brick place on Maple Street in upstate New York. Cold even in the summer. The kind of house where sound traveled too well. My name's Evan, and back then I was 16, living with my parents and our golden retriever, Max. We'd just moved in a few months earlier. My parents were obsessed with the place. Character, they called it. I thought it felt like a coffin with too many doors. The layout was weird. 3 floors, each feeling more isolated than the last. My room was on the second floor, the kitchen was below me, and my parents had taken the converted attic as their room. There was a door in the kitchen that led directly to the basement, and that door had a specific, awful sound when it shut. Not just the slam, but the creak and heavy latch. No mistaking it for anything else. It was around midnight when it happened. I was just getting into bed, scrolling on my phone like every other night. Max was curled up on the floor next to my bed, dead asleep. The house was completely still. No wind, no movement, no noise from outside. Then I heard it. That door in the kitchen. Slam! Not a creak, not a bump. That door slammed shut like someone had yanked it from wide open and thrown their whole body into it. I sat bolt upright. Max didn't even flinch. That was the first thing that made my skin crawl. That dog barked at squirrels in the backyard like they were burglars. But he just stayed there, asleep like nothing had happened. I didn't move. I didn't call out. I just stared at my door, trying to listen for footsteps or anything else. Nothing. The air felt heavy, like the house was holding its breath. Now here's the thing. There's no way that door could have slammed by itself. All the windows were shut, no fans on, and like I said, it was heavy. You had to pull hard to close it properly, and I was the only one on the second floor. My parents were upstairs in the attic, and they wouldn't have heard it even if they were awake. I sat there frozen for maybe a full minute before grabbing the pocket knife from my nightstand. Stupid, I know, but it felt better than going down empty-handed. I slipped out of bed, careful not to wake Max. He still didn't stir, which really unnerved me, and started down the stairs. The house was silent. Too silent. Every step I took creaked louder than it should have. I flicked on the hall light, then the second floor landing, then the stairs. Every light I could reach, I turned on. I didn't care about waking anyone up. I just wanted that place lit. I reached the kitchen, heart pounding, and there it was. The basement door was wide open, like completely open. I just stood there staring at it. It wasn't creaking. It wasn't swinging. It was just open. That door had slammed seconds ago, and now it looked like it hadn't moved in hours. I don't know what I expected, but that wasn't it. I just stared into that black rectangle leading down into nothing. The light switch for the basement was inside the stairwell, so I wasn't about to go in just to flick it on. Then something even worse happened. As I stood there paralyzed, I heard a sound from the basement. Not footsteps, not a thud. It was a voice, a whisper coming from the darkness. Shh. Okay. Okay. Software fast, like someone trying to calm someone else down. I couldn't tell if it was one person or two. It didn't even sound angry. It sounded deliberate, like they knew I was there. I didn't even scream. I just backed up slowly until I hit the hallway wall. Then I turned and ran. I left all the lights on and sprinted back to my room. Max was still asleep, still in the exact same position. I locked my door. Not that it would have helped. I climbed back into bed, knife clutched in my hand, staring at the door until my eyes felt like sandpaper. I didn't sleep, but at some point the sun started coming through the blinds. When I finally worked up the nerve to go back down, I was the first one awake. My parents were still out cold upstairs, and Max finally yawned and stretched like nothing happened. I went down, slowly this time, heart still pounding. The lights were off, all of them. Every light I had turned on was off. And the basement door? Shut, not ajar, not slightly cracked, completely closed, latched. I checked the windows, still shut. No sign anyone had been up. I asked my parents later that morning if either of them had come down. They looked at me like I was insane, said they'd both slept straight through the night. I even asked if Max had gone downstairs. They laughed. He didn't move all night, my dad said. I didn't tell them what I heard. I didn't want to deal with the whole maybe you were dreaming talk. But I wasn't dreaming. I was awake. I heard it. I saw it. And I never heard that door slam again. Not once. Never even creaked after that. But I'll never forget those words. Shh. Okay. Okay. Like I had just interrupted something that wasn't meant to be seen. Something that wasn't supposed to be heard. I moved out 2 years later when I went to college. Story 10. I live alone in a basement apartment in Scarborough, just east of Toronto. Nothing fancy. Bare concrete walls painted white, one small window above the desk that barely lets in any light, and my setup, a basic PC, secondhand chair, and an old lamp that flickers sometimes when the heat kicks in. I'm not really a spiritual or superstitious guy. I work in IT, I troubleshoot routers and talk people through driver updates all day, so I don't jump to ghosts or anything like that. But I swear to you, what happened one night around 2 years ago, I still don't know how to explain it, and it's messed with my head ever since. It was late. Around 1:30 a.m., I had just finished a long Discord call with a friend from the UK. We'd been talking about simulation theory. Yeah, the irony, I know. We went off on one of those rabbit hole tangents about how we might be living in a computer-generated reality. Typical internet conspiracy nonsense. I remember joking and saying, if the world glitches on me tonight, I'm blaming you. He laughed, logged off, and I got up to grab some water. Here's where things start to get weird. I came back, sat down, and I remember clearly, I turned on a video about The Matrix. Not the movie, but one of those deep dive philosophy videos on YouTube, analyzing simulation theory and the nature of consciousness. I watched maybe 10 minutes, then my eyes drifted over to the little window beside my desk. It was pitch black outside. I couldn't see anything, not even streetlights. And then it was like something just snapped. I was suddenly back, same chair, same position, but my monitor was completely black. The room was dead silent. I didn't remember the video ending or even feeling tired. I thought maybe I'd nodded off for a second, microsleep or whatever. But then I moved the mouse. Nothing happened. I pressed the keyboard. Still nothing. The tower wasn't making any noise either. Dead silent. That's when I noticed something really off. The LED on the power button wasn't lit. That didn't make sense. I leaned down under the desk and checked the power strip. It wasn't plugged in. The entire surge bar, power strip, tower, monitor, router, lamp, all of it. The plug was sitting on the floor. Not loose, unplugged, like completely out of the wall. That didn't compute. There was no way I could have watched a video, browsed the web, talked to my friend if the strip was never plugged in. I sat there staring at the cord for maybe a minute, trying to recall unplugging it. I hadn't. I hadn't even been near that side of the wall all day. I actually laughed out loud, like one of those dry, confused laughs. Then I thought, okay, maybe the power flicked and I pulled it out somehow and forgot. Number, I'm not that careless. To double check, I reached over and grabbed my phone. It was dead. That made no sense either. It had been charging during my call at 80% when I checked last. Suddenly, I got this weird feeling in my gut, like when you walk into a room and forget why you're there. But worse, it was like I wasn't alone anymore, like someone had just been there a second ago. Not a presence exactly, but this echo of movement, like reality had hiccuped. I stood up, and I swear to God, the hairs on my arms lifted. My skin went cold. I walked over to the power strip, plugged it in, hit the switch. The fan in the PC tower spun up, monitor flickered back to life. Everything booted like normal. I checked the history, no record of the video I was watching, no trace of the Discord call, no internet tabs open, no log of anything I had done. Even the system time was off, like the BIOS had reset. It was showing 3:06 a.m. Then something else hit me. The clock on the wall, a cheap analog one with a loud tick, was stuck. The second hand had stopped moving. It was stuck at exactly 2:17, frozen. That's when the real fear started to set in. I stood in the center of my room, turning in place, checking everything. My microwave clock was also blank. My phone wouldn't power on, even after I plugged it in. And the worst part, the window. I looked again. Outside was still pitch black. But this time it wasn't just dark, it was nothing. Like no sky, no faint outlines of trees or fences or streetlights. Just a flat, absolute void. Imagine a black sheet of paper 2 inches from your face. That kind of black. Like the world stopped rendering outside my apartment. I stepped back. Something was wrong with the air too. The room didn't feel still. It felt paused, like the air wasn't moving. No humming from the fridge upstairs. No pipes groaning. Just this pressure, almost like being underwater. Not soundless, but muted, artificial. Then I heard it. A clicking, a slow, deliberate clicking noise coming from behind me. Like someone tapping plastic. I turned around fast, heart pounding. Nothing was there. But the clicking continued. It was coming from the mouse. The mouse on my desk was clicking by itself. Single soft clicks every few seconds. Not rapid, not random, patterned, almost like Morse code. I backed up. I couldn't move toward it. Something in me refused. Every instinct screamed not to touch anything, not to interact with it, like I'd break something if I did. I picked up my keys, still staring at the mouse as it clicked, and I bolted. Didn't even put on shoes. Just ran up the stairs, out the side door, and into the night air. When I got outside, it was morning. I swear it was middle of the night seconds ago. Now the sun was rising, birds chirping, cars moving. I pulled out my phone. It powered on. Battery at 76%. Everything worked again. I went back inside after an hour of standing in the driveway, unsure what to do. When I got down to my apartment, the clock on the wall was ticking again. Power was on. Internet worked. The mouse wasn't clicking, but nothing in the browser history had changed. No log of the Discord call, no Matrix video in the watch history, no system uptime logs, nothing in Event Viewer. It's like the entire thing, everything from the moment I sat down, never happened. But I remember all of it, too clearly, and I don't use that computer anymore. I got a new laptop, I even moved apartments. I've never told anyone in person about this, because it sounds insane. But I swear, it happened.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them. And guess what? That's normal. Regain, powered by BetterHelp, offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd tried couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.